Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, the Renaissance man who does everything in this place related to video and podcasting. Silent Phil on the ones and twos. Special guest today, Finley Market President and CEO Joe Hansbauer. Looking forward to having Joe on our podcast for the first time and sharing about the growth of Finley Market and just how it's withstood. I mean, what a tradition that it is in our city and that it's withstood the test of time. And when you think of Cincinnati, you certainly, on one hand, you probably, many people would mention Finley Market as coming to mind, the legendary Finley Market. Sherry, how are you?
I don't know. I should ask Phil. Phil and I hung out together last night at the Inquirers in conjunction with Xavier University and WVXU's first mayoral debate. How you doing, Phil? I'm pretty tired.
I'm pretty tuckered out, too.
Well, what was
never too tired for the podcast, though.
That's good. What was your takeaways from the mayoral debate?
I spent my day yesterday taking calls of people like, well, what do you think is going to happen? And you know what I said? I don't know. How many times have we said on this podcast, it's a quiet mayoral race. There's not a lot of issues. We're just kind of coasting
through.
Still
not a lot of issues.
That's changing after last night. Both candidates, they brought the feisty, and it was a really spirited debate. Please read Scott Wortman's story about it, and you can watch it on Cincinnati.com. And I'm not just here to plug it, but I think we really saw the mayor's race belatedly kick off last night. We see what's going to happen, and it is going to be experience versus fresh ideas. Which do we want?
I mean, are you expecting now, like, for this to be like a sprint to the finish? Because until last night, and I guess until some media organization stepped up and said, "Hey, we're going to host a debate here," these two candidates seemed to be totally fine with just rolling, you know, kind of Joe Biden-esque campaign here. Like, hey, we're going to roll under the radar and not really do a whole lot.
You know, because I think they're both Democrats, and Aftab said, you know, repeatedly last night, you know, David Mann's attacking me. I don't think that's what citizens want. He kind of like took that tack and he wanted to make it really more about, you know, issues. But you know, those white paper issue kind of things weren't getting a lot of. There we go. That's what I meant. It took getting those two in the same room to get it going. And I feel like it's full steam ahead. David Mann, I will say, had the line of the night. I did not see it coming. He timed it perfectly. He had the last say with the coin toss and their kind of like summation statements at the end. And we were on a very strict, it's on the radio, you have to adhere to 60 minutes. And as Phil knows, Jason and I aren't like big fans of like adhering to the time limits given to us. But last night, that was not a joke. It had to happen. And David, right at the very end, said, his line was very similar to this, not in an exact quote, Aftab has been flying a kite and now he wants to take control of a 747 and you're all the passengers. And it really got a huge reaction. And then it was like, it's a wrap.
That's a good line.
I asked him about really it afterwards, you know, because you could tell it was the kind of line that just didn't occur to him. Like, you know, the debate lines. And I said, you know, how long have you been holding on to that? And he said, honestly, that he had just been thinking about trying to offer a comparison of himself and Aftab, and it came to him a couple of days ago, and that's really how he saw it. And then of course he did say that he saved that up for the debate, so which we appreciate as someone who's hosting a debate.
I'm glad to see that there's become talking about the issues, which are still few and far between, but the one is that public safety is now starting to be, they're being put on the spot on public safety, and they're clearly very different on that issue. And that's an issue that's incredibly important to citizens. And so the fact that I think I really do think that is the defining issue in this race. And we'll see how the campaigns play it. But you know, that's really all up to David Mann, whether he wants to define his opponent or not. And so far it's September 22nd and until last night. And I was a little struck by the fact that he tweeted afterward and said, this is a great start. Well, a great start on September 21st. I mean, like this is a campaign that probably should have been aggressive not too long after the May primary to, this needed to be an underdog mentality to define his opponent, to establish, I mean, really, he needed to take on the John Cranley role, I thought, in this campaign and go all in aggressive and playing offense for months and months. That hasn't happened. That's not his style. We'll see how it turns out. And, you know, in fairness, that these are a little different times than 2017, obviously, with the pandemic. You know, people seem to be pretty fatigued right now still from the pandemic and the 2020 election, and we'll see what happens.
Other than being tired from last night, since I had to stay up past my bedtime, I'm re-energized. So I feel like you can all look for some stories coming here.
Sounds
and
great.
I did do a big comparison on public safety, really big, long conversations with both of them one-on-one, trying to pin them down beyond their talking points. Because if I hear those talking points one more time, I might go to sleep, like Jason pointed out earlier. But so if you're looking for kind of the differences there, I did write about that.
Sounds great. Well, we'll jump over and bring on Findlay Markets, Joe Hansbauer. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome to our podcast just another in a long string of great guests, and really looking forward to welcoming and pleased to welcome the CEO and president of Findlay Market, Joe Hansbauer. Joe, how you doing?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me this morning.
It's another one of those podcasts that we're doing on the phone for safety reasons, and you wish you were there in person. Are you at Findlay Market right now?
I am indeed, yes.
I don't even care that it's raining outside. Like, I just feel like I need to get some things for dinner, like do some food prep. I want to come there. But we're at the Enquirer.
Well, swing on by later.
Joe, what's I mean, I know this is a big, broad question. We want to get in and talk a little bit about some of the things you've done, but what's new at Findlay Market right now that people who haven't been in a while, because it's been the pandemic, what's something new that you want folks to know about?
For sure, yeah. I mean, so first of all, especially for those that maybe, you know, it's been you know, maybe even longer than the pandemic. Maybe it's been, you know, a few years since they've been down. You know, redevelopment in the market, in the market neighborhood, you know, has really been quite hot and heavy here the last few years. So for those that haven't been for a couple of years, if you came down, you know, I think the first thing that you would notice is that the blocks immediately surrounding the market are developed now, right? The storefronts are no longer empty. You know, Elm and Ray Streets are bustling. You know, maybe not quite yet to the levels of the Market House, but they're getting there, right? And you know, folks like Jose Salazar, you know, opening a restaurant across from the market, Goose and Elder. Jean Robert opening a spot, French Cross on the other corner across from the market, a great new Asian and sushi restaurant called Kanji, you know, and it kind of goes on and on, right? So there's restaurants and storefronts along the streets surrounding the market that really create an opportunity for people not only to come down and get their fresh foods and experience the market proper, the market house itself, but also to wander a bit and explore the neighborhood in ways that maybe, you know, previously they wouldn't, there wouldn't have been anything for them to visit.
What do you consider the market proper? The house and the streets and the businesses along it?
Yeah, I think colloquially we call it the market square. So that's the market house sitting on Elder Street and the 18 buildings directly surrounding it. You know, we kind of reference as Market Square, and then the Market District would then expand to include Elm and Ray Streets, ultimately and traditionally from Liberty Street up to Finley Street would be the Market District, and you know, and that's where we're looking to go. We want to see every one of those storefronts on Elm and Ray Street developed and occupied. In a really kind of expansive and robust market district is the direction we're headed.
So you took over 10 years ago. How would you describe it then and now?
Yeah, I would say that the market was quite healthy a decade ago. You know, if you rewind a decade before that, as the market house was coming out of its market house renovation, you know, so the glass structure that you see today and some of the storefronts surrounding it happened back in 2001. And at that time, the market wasn't very healthy. You know, half of the market house was empty. None of the storefronts surrounding it were developed or occupied. You had about 200-ish thousand annual shoppers. About 10 years ago, the market was in a much better spot. Nearly all the stalls inside the market house were occupied and had recently been occupied. We had just added Sunday shopping hours, you know, just over 10 years ago. And some of the storefronts were starting to come around. And then we saw shopping levels of about 600,000 folks. Fast forward to today, and the, you know, the market house is fully occupied and has been short, you know, a couple of changeovers of businesses here and there for about the last 8 years. Most of the storefronts surrounding the market are developed and occupied. We have 1.2 million annual shoppers. We saw certainly a little bit of dip in that last year during the pandemic, but we've been, you know, kind of gradually increasing. But it's a, you know, it's a robust market that includes a very vibrant outdoor market for the better part of the year on Elder Street on Saturdays and Sundays, a nearly full farmers market on Saturdays and Sundays. So it is, you know, it's a more robust neighborhood today than certainly it was 10 years ago. And then I think we've also then began to shift our focus a little bit from kind of the core market operations to a broader vision of supporting food entrepreneurs and their ability to start, grow, and scale food-related businesses. And so that march really started in earnest about 6 years ago with the development of Finley Kitchen, which is our 8,000 square foot incubator kitchen and commissary that allows businesses to, you know, come into a health department approved facility and start, grow, and scale their business. And so that began a big shift for us in not just being a great retail location, but also supporting businesses and their ability to really get started.
What are some of your Finley Kitchen successes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a decent number of them. We've had over 20 businesses that have started in Finley Kitchen and quote unquote graduated out either into their own commissary that they own or into their own storefront or either retail or restaurant space. We've supported some larger businesses, places like Eli's Barbecue to scale, Fo Lang and Fo Lang Restaurant Group really utilize the kitchen to significantly increase their production, to allow them to move to a 7-day-a-week restaurant that was open during lunch and dinner. So there's that side of it, and that's more of the scale side. But we've also had businesses like the Arepa Place, that literally started their business in Findlay Kitchen. They were one of the first places to begin operating out of Findlay Kitchen, did a couple years of pop-up street retail, and they moved into their own storefront here at Findlay Market. They're now opening a second location up in Wyoming. We have a number of stories similar to that of places that came into the market or came into Findlay Kitchen with an idea, having not had any business prior to that, using the commissary and then continuing to grow their business. We are now moving into the next phase of that, which is Findlay Launch. Findlay Launch is a curriculum-based accelerator that looks like a traditional kind of tech accelerator, except for it's for food. So we give them 9 weeks of business support and mentorship. And then we've got two storefronts that businesses can move into and really run a true kind of food service operation across the street from the market. So Urban Vegan and Empanadas Box just moved into their storefronts in the last couple of weeks. They are on Elm Street, kind of diagonal from the James Bar, the Beer Garden area. Both of those, again, started their businesses actually during the pandemic at Findlay Kitchen, began to grow through street retail and catering operations, and now have a storefront where they can really test out, right? Is this what I want to do, right? Does this work? Do people respond to the food? And by seeing a growing consumer base, and do I want to then move into a full-time storefront at the conclusion of the 9 months in the storefront?
I mean, can you ever have too many empanadas? No, you cannot.
You cannot. And their food is absolutely amazing. They have 16 flavors of empanadas. So obviously all of your traditional kind of Buenos Aires and Miami and, you know, your Jamaican jerk chicken empanadas. But they also have things like Cincinnati chili empanadas, right? So it's something that you literally can't get anywhere else in the world.
Jason, are you taking notes? Jason's a big chili. We veer into chili on this podcast. We might as well call it the Chili Podcast. We might with right. like a renaming, but all right. So Jason, you got that?
I got
chili
that.
Empanada. Okay.
I got
Sorry,
it.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
Absolutely.
So whose idea was Findlay Launch? Do you just come up with this? Do you have a board? Like, how do you launch new things like this?
Definitely, our board is a great resource. I will certainly say that our Director of Food Innovation, Marianne Hamilton, we brought her on board as we were developing out Findlay Kitchen, and she helped take that concept from kind of back of napkin, this is what we're trying to do, to full operations, and then has continued to push us forward in ways as we think through, you know, how we support food entrepreneurs, and that includes, you know, folks that are coming through the door and to start their business at Findlay Kitchen, but it also includes, you know, every one of the businesses at Findlay Market. You know, ultimately, these are all small businesses, independently owned and operated. They are all food entrepreneurs, right? And so, you know, even businesses that have been, you know, are in sixth generation at their market, you know, we are looking for ways that we can help support them, move them into new areas of marketing and promotion, you know, assist them in any way that we can to continue to make sure that, you know, their business and their operations are relevant in 2021. And she has been at the forefront of every bit of that work. We are lucky to have snagged her as she moved here back, or she's from here, but moved back from New York after a number of years out there supporting food brands. And she has been amazing. So she really drives a bunch of this work for sure.
A big key to making all of this happen was really taking the market right from kind of like just being funded in the city budget to making it a nonprofit. What year did that happen?
The Corporation for Failing Market was created and started its management of the operations right as the market was coming out of renovations. So part of the impetus for the investment, and it was a collection of some city funds, a large pool of state funds, and then a smaller amount of federal funds went into the market in 2001 to expand the market, create the roll-up door area, completely renovated to, you know, all the way down to the, you know, to the floor, if you will. Really, the only thing remaining of the original market structure is that red wrought iron structure that you see and we highlight in the facility. And so at that time, when that renovation happened and those funds were made available, part of the impetus for those funds being made available was that there needed to be a private entity managing the market. So that's when we took over, you know, and I think a big part of that has been as well kind of creating a full-time focus on both the management as well as the promotion of the market and really increasing its liveliness. Certainly, you know, a big part of that is also reducing the burden that that was laid upon the city for managing the market and the costs associated with the physical upkeep of it. And so we have taken on quite a bit of that. We still get plenty of support and cooperation with the city of Cincinnati, but certainly that comes at a much lower level than it was 20 years ago.
Where does Findlay Market fit? Like, if we look nationally across at, like, mm-hmm. Cleveland's West Side Market, like, where would you say that we kind of fit into the national picture? You can say the top, because both Jason and I are good with that. So go right ahead and be like, number one.
We are clearly the best. You know, I say that half facetiously, but I think it is, there's a lot of truth to it as well. You know, we were just a year and a half ago ranked among the top 10 food markets in the world by Newsweek. I don't know that that was an overly scientific poll, but we will claim it and take it. We were the only North American market in that list. And I think, you know, when you look at public markets, you know, and certainly there's a public podcast, so I'm not going to disparage any other markets or the work that they're doing there. But maintaining a strong fresh food market in the way that public markets were originally designed to feed people and make fresh, healthy foods available to communities, that's a big lift, right? And over the last certainly 7 years, as we've seen kind of the rise of suburban development, big box stores, everything under one roof, the ability for a business model to include, you know, selling commodity items at a loss in order to get you to buy, you know, magazines and candy bars and soda pop, right? You know, those things, that doesn't exist at the market, right? We can't sell, you know, the produce guy has to sell enough produce to make a living and to support his business. He can't sell produce at a loss so that, you know, the meat and cheese folks can make a profit, right? Everybody has to make a profit on their own standing. And it's certainly a lot less convenient, right? You know, we're not open, you know, from 5 a.m. to midnight or, in, you know, a lot of cases, 24 hours a day, right? We are, you know, we're a market that's open 9 to 6 during the week, 8 to 6 on Saturdays, 10 to 4 on Sundays. That is not the most convenient way. That, all that being said, I think we have a tremendous amount to offer, right, in terms of supporting small businesses, supporting farmers, creating an experience for people to turn a chore, grocery shopping, into something that they bring their friends along with, right? And we've seen that really take off over the last 12 to 18 months during the pandemic, right, as people have, you know, stopped going out as much and they're, you know, buying groceries and they're eating at home, the market was able to step into that space and allow people to discover or rediscover the market as a fresh food market again. But it was still something that in the safest way possible felt normal, if not exciting, right? It wasn't, you know, you weren't sitting, you know, at home. You were able to go out. You were able to do something. You were able to interact with other people. And that community connection that we try to build at Market, right, the place where you can go and stand side by side with strangers in a market, to see friends that you haven't seen in a long time, to engage with acquaintances that that maybe you don't know very well. But this is an opportunity to share over food and culture in a way that you're not going to get almost anywhere else, but certainly not in your traditional big box grocer. And so that's, I think that's really what the market is all about. And I think, you know, we've been able to keep that at the center and at the forefront of what we're doing. Certainly as people start to come back out, right? And, you know, we look to create opportunities for people to fill these restaurants again, to, you know, to spend and linger a little bit longer than maybe they were, you know, last summer or last fall, you know, before the vaccine was available and people felt more comfortable. And so that's really kind of where our focus is, once again, is having a fresh food market, having a place where people can gather, but also kind of supporting that entertainment side as well.
Joe, I think our listeners can agree with me here and just can tell how passionate you are about this job and about the growth of Findlay Market, its role in the vibrancy of the city and, you know, the comeback and redevelopment of Over the Rhine and the urban core overall. And I just wonder, you know, how did you come about to become the CEO and president of Findlay Market? Did you grow up dreaming of doing this job? You know, how did that all happen for you?
Great question. You know, certainly have a bit of a wandering career path. So it was not built, I think, with a trajectory that would have been obvious that this would have been my landing spot. You know, did 10 years of management consulting by studies. I'm an electrical engineer with a minor in semiconductor design. So that is not necessarily the usual path to running a market or a retail outlet. But I did spend, you know, a good portion of my time even at Accenture, helping to start, grow, and scale Give Back Cincinnati, which is an all-volunteer organization of young professionals involved in the community and doing large-scale service events. And then coming out of that, I kind of combined the work that I was doing on the technology side with the passion I had for community to help start YouGive.org, which was an online platform that helped connect high school and college students to service opportunities in their local career or local communities, and then expanded that to 28 states over the course of a number of years. And so, again, like, you know, none of that screams, you know, hey, the next obvious step here is going to be, you know, to lead Findlay Market or to help steward it into the future. But I think more than anything, for more than 20 years have been a tremendously large cheerleader for Cincinnati. I have I've spent time in many, many parts of this country. I've worked in New York City and Seattle and Portland, Maine and Philadelphia and Delaware. And all of those communities have wonderful things. But I would put Cincinnati right up there in terms of its assets and scale. Right. It's not the biggest city in the world, but it is also not a little podunk town. And I think that we've had things to cheer about and to be proud of for a long, long time. But over the last 20 years, with the growth of the city, the redevelopment of the urban core, you know, things like FC Cincinnati and the reemergence of our brewing culture, all of those things make it a lot easier to be a cheerleader for Cincinnati. But the market has been there through all of it, right? The market has been continuously operating as a public market right here in this part of Over the Rhine since 1852. And so it has seen, you know, everything from the conclusion of the Civil War to, you know, the move in of the Appalachian community into our urban core in the early part of the 1900s, to a rising and growing African-American community up through the middle part of the century, all the way up through now. That community continues, the African-American community continues to support the market as shoppers and has been, you know, through this pandemic as well. And we are looking for a way to continue to build that community here. And so for me, when the opportunity became available to steward the market into the future, I jumped at it, right? There's nothing that I would rather be doing than figuring out ways to highlight this jewel and gem that I think many, many other cities would love to have, right? And we have it, right? It's built on authenticity. It's built on history. And a lot of those things are not something you can recreate. There's not, a week or a month that goes by that I don't hear from other communities and other public markets, or communities that are looking to build a new public market. Louisville opened one 2 years ago. Lexington is looking to do that. We've had conversations with Reading Terminal in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. And there's a thing that we've got here, right? And that continuity of operations, the legacy that exists there, but certainly these things that we are taking the market at the center and wrapping things around it, right? And I know we already talked about a bit about Finney Kitchen, but, you know, we've got, 60 businesses operating out of Finney Kitchen right now. Almost 90% of them are women immigrant or minority-owned businesses. Creating those opportunities for folks that are typically the door is not open to them, funding sources are not open to them. You know, that's what this is all about, is creating those opportunities, right? You don't have to have any special skills or schooling to start a food-related business. You really don't. You have to have something that reflects who you are and what your culture is. And if we can then wrap around services around your passion, there's no better way for people to get started and really grow grow their passion. So I hope to be here for a long time coming. I think there's more opportunity at the market in this neighborhood. We continue to look for ways to partner with other redevelopment corps in other communities as they look to, replenish and revitalize their business districts. The core of a business district anymore is certainly food and food experiences, restaurants, breweries, and those kind of things. And so what we are looking to do is, as we have more and more folks that are looking to start a business, we want to create opportunities for them to do it, whether that's in Pallet Hill or Walnut Hills or Lower Price Hill or Avondale or Bond Hill, Hyde Park, Oakley, wherever it might be. We are looking for ways to help fill storefronts and revitalize communities throughout our region.
Did you know when you asked when Blue Oven Bakery came that there would be a line around the block for them?
So certainly Mark Frohmeyer, the owner of Blue Oven, he has hit an interest that I think perhaps maybe he didn't even quite know was going to be there, right? So, he certainly has a great mind for business. He also has, a dedication and a passion to products that exceeds any other. But I think there's pieces along the way here where I think he was surprised at just, how many people would line up. We love that he's now here 6 days a week with us. Obviously for a long, long time, he was in a pop-up tent and just here on Saturdays and Sundays. And now he's got, his roll-up door operation and, come get bread, 6 days a week now, which is amazing. He's had a rough time of it as well. They had a fire, in their, kitchen out on the farm, about almost a year ago now, I guess. And so we've supported him, in the kitchen, to allow him to continue to produce, and expand operations as they kind of figure out, you know, what the next step is for them and how to rebuild. So we love having them down there. Certainly they bring in a large audience, you know, all the time, but it's pretty cool to see.
Before we go, can you remind us the hours of the market and when we can go buy bread and cheese and the things?
Absolutely. So we're open Tuesday to Friday from 9 a.m. to 6. Saturday, we open a little bit earlier at 8 a.m. And close again at 6. And then Sunday, we're 10 to 4. Some of the businesses surrounding it, you know, will open a little earlier. Rooted Juicery in Cherbourg, Bakery are open a little bit earlier during the week. Some of the restaurants, Arepa Place, Eli's, Kanji, French Crust, Goose and Elder, Folang, they're open a little bit later. But the core market is 9 to 6, Tuesday to Friday, 8 to 6 Saturday, 10 to 4 Sunday.
Great stuff, Joe. Thanks for joining us here today. And we'll see you at the market.
Awesome. See you soon.
Thanks again to Joe Hansbauer. Good stuff. You just feel his passion for this kind of come through the speaker, the phone there. And
I love how he compared us to other cities and just talked about how great Cincinnati is. Because, you know, we can be self-critical here, but we have so much to offer.
The market's
one of those things.
I always say we punch above our weight in a lot of ways.
And Findlay Market's top of that list?
No doubt. That brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And Sherry is eager to share. I wish we had a drum roll, but we don't. Sherry, take it away.
I don't know about eager. I think I'm still tired. I went to Chicago for the Bears-Bengals game. I mean, I think it's fair to say that I'm a casual football fan, but I did grow up in the 1970s, sorry, and just the Bears and
in Northeast Ohio.
They were just huge, and everyone loved them. And I was like, you know what? I feel like this is a good time for a road trip. Go to Chicago. It's been a while, and I'm pretty sure all of Cincinnati went with me. The streets where you have to walk everywhere in Chicago, that's not a joke. I did like 20,000 steps 2 days. Wow. But it was just the streets were teeming with Who Day. It was fun to see the enthusiasm for Cincinnati somewhere else.
And so I'm assuming your moment of the week is the fact that the Bengals blew a big game.
I'm not going to lie.
Is that the moment?
I didn't know that for a little bit. That's how much fun everyone was having. I sat in the nosebleeds. That was quite the climb. And it was full of Bengals fans where I was. And yes, we were watching the game, but we were all talking about Cincinnati and the game was unfolding. It wasn't pretty down there. But then it was kind of, you turn around, you're like, oh no, what happened there?
Yeah.
They're going to fix that next week. But I heard, I read that in some stories. Listen to our Bengals podcast. They're going to break that all down, I am sure. So make this a two podcast week.
Bengals Beat Podcast, produced by none other than Silent Phil.
When does he find the time? And I feel like if we're going to make lists of ranking things, like difficult podcast hosts, Phil, could you make that list for us?
Well, that's very kind of you.
We don't believe you. Our schedules.
Anyway, good stuff. And thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.